Hi guys, and welcome back to Tales from Wisteria Lane, the podcast where we give you a fair view of all things Desperate Housewives. I'm Joel.
I'm Billy Ray.
And today we will be discussing Season 6, Episode 19, We All Deserve to Die.
Yes, what a grim title.
Right? So I will be doing the overview and B will be doing the trivia. So do you have anything to start us off?
So this episode was written by Josanne McGibbon and Sarah Parriott. It was directed by Larry Shaw and it first aired on the 18th of April 2010. So in this week from Monday the 12th of April to 18th of April 2010, on the Monday the 12th, a train derailed near Murano, Italy after running into a landslide causing 9 deaths and injuring 28 people.
Damn.
The 45th Academy Country Music Awards took place on Sunday the 18th of April with Carrie Underwood, Brad Paisley and Miranda Lambert winning awards.
Woo, Carrie Underwood.
The number one song in the US was Rude Boy by Rihanna and the number one song in the UK was This Ain't a Love Song by Scouting for Girls.
Yes, I love Scouting for Girls. I like their album.
The title of this episode is taken from the lyric in the song Epiphany from the Stephen Sondheim musical Sweeney Todd, The Demon Barber of Fleet Street. And coincidentally, the next episode is called Epiphany.
Yeah, I know.
On IMDb, the trivia says body count 1, Irina Kozokov. And I thought that was funny.
Kozokov, yeah.
This episode was watched by 10.662 million viewers in its original broadcast. And there are 2 IMDb reviews at time of recording. The first one is by Wait Here, who gave the episode a 9 out of 10 stars on the 20th of May 2010 and titled the review, Good Start to the Finale. And the first part of the review says, Desperate Housewives has done it again. They give us all these great storylines full of mystery, leaving us with so many questions. Of course, Angie Rowland and her family are a big part of this year, but the other residents of Wisteria Lane and their problems too. This episode was fantastic. Great pacing, great writing, and Felicity Huffman has never been better. I can't wait for the next episode to see how everything unravels.
Yeah.
And M-47826 gave the episode 6 out of 10 stars on the 23rd of May 2023 and titled their review, I like this episode. And the start of their review says, especially for that scene where Lynette owns the gold digger. And frankly, she was an awful human being, so who cares if Eddie strangled her? And you can read, if you want to read more of that, those reviews, you can do on IMDb.
Yep. I mean, it's not really the finale yet, but it's certainly setting up towards it.
Yeah, we know who the Wisteria Strangler is, or the Fairview Strangler.
By the end of this episode, yeah.
And that's all the trivia I have.
Okay. So, previously on Desperate Housewives, Gabby found out that Bob and Lee are planning to adopt a baby. Mike got upset that Susan paid off his loan for him using her strip club money. Arena convinced Preston to move the wedding to next week. Although it feels like people have forgotten about this storyline because it's not really mentioned again until this episode, we are still none the wiser regarding to who strangled Julie and murdered the chick from the coffee cup.
Yeah, the killer's been on a break.
Yeah, and Sam has got closer to Bree and aroused the suspicion of Orson and Andrew. Oh, and finally, Patrick Logan has found the Bolands.
Yes.
So, Gabby is standing outside Bob and Lee's and listening to them argue with each other, but before she can hide, Bob storms out and sees that Gabby has been eavesdropping. Apparently she was only there to return a magazine that Lee lent to her, which is very of its time.
I really like her red tracksuit in this scene, by the way. How does she always look really good in any tracksuit?
I don't know, and it's really unfair. Eva Longoria, you've got some splaining to do.
Yeah.
So she follows Bob inside, and he tells her that they're arguing because their egg donor dropped out, and they will lose their surrogate if they don't find another one within a month. Lee then comes along and says that he can't take any more, and believes that maybe the universe is telling them that they shouldn't be parents, and this is when Gabby decides to open her mouth and offer her eggs.
Yeah, but that was interesting, considering how much trouble her and Carlos have had getting pregnant previously.
Yes.
I thought that was an interesting thing to happen, but can't blame Bob and Lee for jumping at the idea, because the genetics look good.
Genetics do look good.
Yeah.
Like, come on. So Carlos is refusing to let Gabby donate her eggs to Bob and Lee because he believes he owns half of those eggs or is at least a major stockholder in Gabby's body. He therefore believes that he has a right to stop her from handing out her eggs to whoever walks by, like some rapidly producing friendly chicken.
Okay, but that later line was really funny.
What?
When he says that he's at least a major.
When he's like, I pay for the water it drinks, the food it eats, and the implants it will one day require. Like,
yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, I understand the point that he actually does end up eventually making about how, oh, it'd be weird, we'd have DNA on the street. Like, okay, yeah, I kind of get it. It's not the opinion I would have, but I get it.
No.
But he went about it in a really odd way.
Yes, because he doesn't own half of those eggs.
No.
Those eggs are all Gabby's. He only owns half of whatever is in Gabby when his sperm has inseminated it. And it won't be his sperm inseminating it, so it won't be half his.
Yeah, he had a really horrible attitude about the whole thing.
He really
did. Especially when he's like any gay that comes by and owning half of Gabby's body, and you don't own her body.
No, you don't. Not, it's not cute. Not cute at all, Carlos. So Carlos threatens to cut up Gabby's credit cards, but she claims she doesn't care because she's trying to do a nice thing. And then Carlos begs as her husband for her not to do this, but she still won't listen.
And she's also hidden the credit cards.
Well, yeah, that too. So Gabby is with Bob and Lee, toasting to their new agreement. Lee is bitchy, as usual. And then Gabby sits down and starts to talk to them about our baby. So Lee says he wants a girl so that they can do child beauty pageants, which I'm sorry, we will discuss that in a moment. And then luckily, Gabby kind of judges them for that choice and tells them that she hopes for a boy because all she's ever had a girl so far. So when she's old enough, she'll take him on like the biggest shopping spree ever. And then Bob sits down with her and tells her that when they have the baby, they plan on moving closer to Bob's mother so that the baby can be near family. And Gabby is shocked to hear it. And Bob and Lee then have to explain to her that the child won't be hers. It will be theirs. And then it finally clicks with Gabby and she kind of understands what she's agreed.
Yeah, this is what I mean. She's got a lot of weird ideas about her body and babies and stuff because of what's happened to her in the past.
Yeah.
So maybe it's really not that good an idea.
No, I don't really think it would be a good idea for Gabby. I think she'd really struggle with it.
And this plays into some future stories with Gabby and children and her body and stuff as well.
Yeah, it's not over, but can we go back to the child beauty pageants?
Yeah, because I'm bored of the sad stuff. Let's talk about that. That's fucked. Yeah,
that's messed up, but I'm sorry. I'm sorry, people out there, I get it. Like, there's obviously a market for them because they continue to happen.
No,
but
I don't get it.
Stop.
Yeah, I don't get like, it. No, it's a bad thing. It's a bad idea. Don't agree with it. Absolutely terrible.
No.
Disgusting.
And Gabby even harkens back to an old storyline, which I loved as well, where she was like, I was a part of that world, and for me, it was a bit much. Do you remember that?
Yeah, that was interesting. That was funny.
It was a really fun storyline, but still, I'm against everything about child beauty pageants. Like, I can't stand them. I think they're really wildly inappropriate, really creepy.
It's just a bit of a weird nonce heaven.
Yeah.
The only good thing that have come out of child beauty pageants is the film Little Miss Sunshine.
Yeah, that's true. That is a great film. So Gabby comes home and sees Juanita and Celia and gets sad thinking about not being able to see them every day. Later on, Gabby goes over to see Bob, who's drinking coffee and he's all sad and shit. And apparently Carlos has been and told them that Gabby won't give them her egg, which I think is shameful of Gabby for making Carlos be the one to tell Bob and Lee.
Yeah, but I think this is a really hard topic for Gabby.
Well, yeah, but Gabby is the one that offered.
Yeah, of course. It's nice that he was there to do that for her, though.
Yeah. It turns out that this incident has caused Bob and Lee to break up. So Bob and Lee are now over for now. We'll see how long that lasts because they kind of just kind of brush past that. That's like not a big thing at all with Desperate Housewives world.
Yeah, I like that Bob's here and Lee's left because I didn't like Lee.
Yeah.
He was the worst.
Yeah, even though Bob was still all for the child beauty pageants as well.
Yeah, Bob had problems. Pretty sad story for Gabby in all.
It was a sad story for Gabby, Bob and Lee. I know we don't like Bob and Lee, but it's still sad for them as well, I guess. So the newspaper is reporting on another missing girl, and the police have no leads and have no idea where she's gone or whether she's still alive. And then we see someone cutting that out of the paper and putting it in a scrapbook alongside Julie's newspaper clipping from when she was attacked, although we don't see who it is. We then cut to the paper on Susan's kitchen island while she's serving up breakfast, where she sees someone outside breaking into Mike's truck. Naturally, she flings the eggs out of the frying pan and takes a leaf out of Rapunzel's book and goes outside to threaten this ruffian with the pan, telling him to hit the dirt.
Yeah, she was trying to be so tough here.
She really was.
I loved it.
Frying pans, who knew, right? She yells fire to get people's attention because that's what we're told to do. Yell fire because people react quicker. And Angie runs out, so Susan tells Angie to call the police, but it turns out that it's not a theft, it's a repossession, as Mike is 4 months behind on his payments.
I mean, Susan had the right idea not to just believe that right away, but it really was a repossession.
I know, it's really embarrassing as well, because she's yelled fire, so people are out on the street looking now.
Yeah, and Lee's run out with the whole towel around his head.
Yeah, he's got the towel and the nightgown on.
Fire extinguisher.
Stop, drop and roll! Which is, again, good advice. Well done, Lee. So, of course, Susan is upset at Mike for keeping his money problems from her, and she offers to help. But once again, he refuses to accept her money, claiming he'll figure it all out himself.
Yeah. Oh, we're back at this again.
And he's also really butthurt that the entire neighborhood now knows that his truck's been repossessed. And Susan does try to bring up how is he going to run a plumbing business when he doesn't have a vehicle.
Well, maybe you'd be less embarrassed if you had told Susan about this stuff, and then when the car got repossessed, you'd know it was going to happen and not call on the whole neighbourhood to come out and view it.
Exactly.
This guy's got a really weird idea of what should happen in a marriage.
Well, he's feeling things from his childhood, isn't he? That was kind of established in the last episode. But instead of working through it, it's just being perpetuated.
Yeah, exactly. He's got problems from his past.
Yes. So in the next scene, MJ is trying to clog the sink with mud. Cutest thing in the world, because he believes it will help his dad who needs the work.
Well, that's why it's the cutest thing in the world.
Yeah, it's not cute because of what he's doing. It's cute for the reason that he's doing it.
Oh, thank God. I just saw like my future then and I got worried.
Why? Because that'll be me and the kid clogging the sink.
Yeah, like, oh, it's so cute when the kids do these things.
Susan rightfully tells MJ that they don't pay for plumbing work, and MJ asks if she should do it to others, which she says no to because that would be wrong, but it does give her an idea, and even though she tells MJ it's wrong, it doesn't stop Susan from going over to all the neighbours' houses, giving them money, causing them plumbing problems, and then getting them to call Mike.
Yeah, I think it's hilarious. Terrible idea, but really funny.
So messy.
In my head, I was like, is she going to go around people's houses with MJ and distract them while he destroys their sinks? What's going to happen here?
I do like that Susan pays them.
Yeah, it's bizarre. This marriage is just crazy.
Yeah, and Susan even admits when she's talking to Bree, like Bree's the first person that we see she goes to, and she's saying that she's having a problem with Mike and his male ego. So can she fuck up her plumbing?
All these ladies are so familiar with male ego problems. They're all just like, you know what, just go ham.
Yeah, they all just open the door. Susan's there, explains the situation. They're like, come in.
Yeah, I'm not really sure what was worse, out of her filling Gabby's bathtub with dirt or putting knives and forks down someone else's.
She throws a spoon down Angie's garbage disposal. She rips something out of Lynette's toilet. And she fills Gabby's bathtub with dirt. We don't really see what she does to Breeze.
What's with the dirt? Oh my God.
I don't know. What is it with Susan and MJ and dirt?
How is Gabby going to explain that?
Juanita and Celia.
Oh yeah.
She can get away with it. And Celia doesn't talk either.
They would do that.
They would. And Celia doesn't talk. So she could get away with blaming it on Celia.
Yeah.
So Mike comes home tired from all the local work he's had, which he finds odd, considering it's all cropped up now and he doesn't have a truck. And then he pulls something on Susan, which he found in Gabby's drain, and we have a clip.
Guess what I found?
Oh, my earring. I'm looking all over for that. Where'd you find it?
Gabby's bathtub drain.
Oh, of course. Gabby and I went jogging, and then I hugged her. So my earring probably got caught in her sports bra, and when she went to take a bath. Hey, do you want to have sex?
So Susan obviously tries to explain it away terribly, then moves on to sex.
I really liked that distraction. Hey, do you want to have sex?
But when that doesn't work, she is honest. She tells Mike. Mike gets upset that Susan made it obvious to everyone that now knows he's having problems. Susan rightfully does tell Mike that this all could have been avoided if he'd just let her help, but Mike believes that they are his problems, which makes Susan believe that there's a problem in their marriage if he's refusing her help, and then Mike storms off and sleeps on the couch.
Well, she's not wrong.
No, she's not.
There's
not at all.
A problem here. He's so unwilling to talk to her about his financial issues, which are their financial issues because they're married.
Yep.
So there's a clear problem here. But also, I don't blame him for being a bit annoyed that she's gone and done something so crazy, and now the whole neighborhood knows about all of his issues, and he feels very emasculated by it all because he has problems with that.
I blame him for feeling that way because he backed Susan into a corner. They have a kid together. If she is aware that he's got money problems, he's refusing to let her help. She can't just sit back and do nothing, knowing full well that there's money problems.
No, of course she can't sit back and do nothing, but she's acting like a crazy person.
Yeah, well, that's because he's backed her into a corner. There's nothing else for her to do. In this situation, I'm siding with Susan, which is a weird thing to say, but bitch, I'm doing it.
I'm not really siding with either of them. They're both acting completely mental.
In Susan's last scene of the episode, which weirdly Susan isn't even in, it turns out that Mike is in a lot of debt. So much that her money won't even make a dent in it, apparently, but he can't bring himself to tell her, so he goes to the only other person he knows can help, which is his rich bestie, Carlos. And then Carlos basically says, how much do you need? And writes him a check, but we don't actually see how much he needs.
No, it's like they were too afraid to commit.
But how much debt is he in if the money that Susan got from the strip club doesn't even help?
Yeah, true.
Like, that's a lot of debt, and what has caused this debt?
Yeah, I don't really know, but it's not really, there's no easy solution. It's not going to be a nice way out.
No, and this, what, aired in 2010? So we can probably assume that the 2009 financial crash and the recession probably is what caused his financial problems.
Yeah, along with multiple things. Hospital visits.
True. Hospital visits. The cost of having a baby in and of itself is astronomical. The wedding.
Yeah, exactly.
Like, it's all probably
I wonder if he
up.
Still has like residual payments from the coma.
Probably, actually.
Yeah, I feel for him. It's not cute. It's kind of a problem with the marriage. But maybe he's afraid that if she ever finds out, then she'll leave him.
Mm. So, Danny is working at the coffee shop thanks to Eddie's influence, and he is serving Patrick Logan, without knowing it, of course. Patrick is pretending to be a struggling writer working on his next novel, but is lacking inspiration. You know, cliche, even John Barrowman says it in the scene, like, cliche, oh, struggling writer coming to a coffee shop, ooh.
Yeah, because he wants to come across as a relatable, normal human being.
Yeah. So Danny asks what it's about. Patrick tells him it's a love story, but it's turning dark. And he explains the story, which is similar to Patrick's story with Angie, surprisingly enough. And then Patrick tells Danny that he doesn't know what to do now that his character has found this woman. And Danny suggests that he should kill the woman in his book, which is exactly what Patrick is thinking.
Yeah.
It's very interesting that Danny goes and says, you should kill her. This is kind of psychotic.
But he thinks it's a book.
No, I know, but I don't mean it's psychotic of Danny. I mean, it's psychotic of Patrick. It's psychotic that Patrick would come to Danny to be like, what should I do about your mum? I'm going to do what you tell me to do. You just don't know it's about your mum.
Yeah,
but should
true.
I kill her? Mm. And then when Patrick kills Angie, and then Danny's like, what the fuck? Why did you do that? Patrick would be like, well, you told me to.
Yeah, this is kind of on you, fella.
So later on, Angie comes home late at night and hears some movement upstairs or in the kitchen, somewhere around the house. She grabs a vase, a vase, and starts to check around the house until the phone rings and distracts her, and it's Nick, but we see Patrick outside.
Mm.
It's like a scene from Scream or something.
Yeah, except he doesn't ask what her favourite scary movie is.
Patrick comes back into the coffee shop. Danny remembers his order, which, as someone that worked at Costa for years, doesn't just happen after one visit from a customer. You don't just get one visit from a customer and remember their order.
It must just be because the guy was in the night before and he found him interesting, right?
But then Danny says, haven't seen you in a while, to Patrick, and forgets he was even writing a book.
I mean, it is his dad. Maybe he just senses something about the guy that draws him to him.
Yeah.
Maybe that's it. Also, let's talk about Patrick's outfit.
I didn't see it.
He's got a shirt and jumper combo. So he's wearing a shirt, blue jumper, very preppy, very Wisteria Lane. I reckon that he wouldn't really wear that. I think he's dressing for the occasion.
Oh, maybe. So he blends in with the local clientele. Love it.
Yeah, because I looked at him and I thought, of all the things I've heard about Patrick Logan, is he the shirt and light pastel-y coloured jumper kind of guy? I don't think so.
No, I don't think so.
This psycho is literally dressing up just to fit in here.
He's an eco-terrorist. Chances are the clothes he's wearing aren't even sustainably sourced. This is how low he's come just to get Angie.
Right, I was like, where's their hemp?
Right. So, Danny asks if Patrick killed the woman in his book yet, but he said he went to, but it didn't feel right, and instead he plans to take the kid.
Yeah, that's all well and good, but what if the kid's a freaking teenager?
Yeah, right?
What are you going to do, drug him?
Which he will be, because Patrick must know that by now Danny's a teenager.
Well, he's looking right at him.
Well, yeah, I know. And yeah. Danny knows he's looking right at him.
It's not like he's a literal child. You can't just kidnap him that easily like he's MJ.
So, Bree and Sam come back from their meeting. Apparently it went well, and Bree will now be working on a Southern-themed cookbook. Bree gushes about Sam's ability to think of subpar slogans off the top of his head, and then Andrew steps forward to question Sam's MBA, claiming he lied on his resume and that he never actually finished college.
Did you know that she actually called him your brother to Andrew as well?
Yeah.
Well, she's being very unsympathetic.
Yeah,
considering
I mean,
how Andrew feels about the guy, but she's literally calling him your brother and not just Sam.
Mm-hmm. I think Bree's not really thinking about it, but ultimately, yeah.
Bree doesn't think about anything.
But it is unfair on Andrew to be referencing Sam as Andrew's brother, and Andrew's clearly having a hard time with all of this. I think it's really insensitive. So Sam confirms to Andrew that he didn't finish college, and he tells Bree that he left school to care for his sick mother so she didn't have to die in the hospital. So this clearly makes Andrew uncomfortable, and Sam apologises to Bree, who basically somehow manages to not acknowledge Sam's apology and instead berate Andrew.
Yeah.
Which is a talent.
I guess it's just what she's used to from living with Andrew for all this time.
Yeah, like Sam apologises, and then Bree goes, no need to apologise. I think we've all learned our lesson here or something. And then she gives Andrew like a filthy look and then leaves. And I'm like, Andrew's not the one that's lied.
Yeah, it's it's awkward.
Like this was Sam's selling point to Bree. It was one of the very first things he said when he walked through that door into our office a few episodes ago. He worked two jobs while studying for college and taking care of his sick mother. Like he literally pinpointed those exact things. And now for Andrew to point out that that was a lie and for Bree to forgive that when, sorry, that was Sam's, you know, selling point about himself. No.
Well, I don't really see why the guy is still working for Bree in the first place, considering that him and Andrew can barely be in the same room.
Yeah.
So why are they still working so closely around each other? It doesn't really make sense. In any other workplace, you'd at least have a very stern conversation with both parties, right?
Yeah. So Brie is getting a bit of kickback regarding her Southern cookbook idea, and apparently people believe they are overdone. So she suggested a dinner for the buyers to sample the recipes themselves. Sam enters and talks to Brie about Andrew, telling her that Andrew has been charging clients for more booze than they are having so that he can take it himself, which admittedly doesn't look good for Andrew.
Well, no, it's illegal.
Andrew tries to get Brie to see the kind of person Sam is, but she is seeing it as a little bit black and white, and Andrew storms off, upset that Brie is so easily manipulated by Sam, telling her to fire him if she loves Sam so much. She tells Andrew not to push her, which he ends up doing.
Literally.
Physically, yeah. Although lightly, it was like a little like shove kind of thing. It wasn't like a...
It was something a physical, child does.
Yeah. And so then she fires him.
Yeah, which isn't a surprise. He deserves to be fired.
He does deserve to be fired for that behaviour, yes.
Yeah, Brie hasn't really got some good staff here, does she?
No, she really doesn't. You've got the guy that can't spell his own name, the guy that's lying about his qualifications, and the thief!
Yeah, there has been a lot of unprofessional work conduct from Andrew here. And Brie should fire him. He's slept with an employee, and he's stolen from clients.
So Brie and Sam are practicing for the dinner, and Sam brings up the firing of Andrew. And Brie tells Sam that she's done worse things to him, and this always happens, but they always come back together. And she will hire him again, eventually, which Sam doesn't really understand.
You see, that made me uncomfortable. When he said about the whole firing your own son, I kind of thought, it's none of your business.
No, it's really not.
If I were Brie, I'd be like, stay out of it.
Yeah, back the fuck up.
Like, you've done your part here.
Stay in your lane, bitch.
Let's move on from it. Yeah.
Yeah.
But you really shouldn't just rehire him because he's your son. He has stolen from clients and slept with an employee. It's not great.
Yeah, it's kind of like nepo baby-ish, isn't it, really?
Yeah, it's just nepotism. It's just straight up nepotism. But
then
again,
he's my son, so he's heir to the throne, so I will give him this throne.
Which she's kind of doing with Sam.
She is, yeah.
She's the nepotism queen.
She really is.
Yeah.
So the next scene sees everybody at this sample dinner now, and we have a clip.
Come out of the kitchen. I want you to spend some time with these people. Mingle. Have a drink.
I don't drink, Bruce. I'm an alcoholic.
One drink. I'm not asking you to swing from the chandelier.
Why are you so nervous?
I really put my neck on the line for this book, Brie. No one likes the idea. No one. Oh, I should have stopped at just one drink.
Look, they are gonna love the food.
I hope so. Because if they don't, I don't see how you're going to publish another book of any kind.
Isn't this story a bit odd?
What?
Well, if there's really no market for Southern cookbooks because it is oversaturated, why would you let Brie make one? Because even if these people love the food, are people going to buy it if there are already so many out there?
Yeah.
I don't understand it. Especially considering that the price range is probably going to be more expensive for Brie's Southern cookbook.
Probably. But I would imagine so. But they need something to up the stakes, and they have upped the stakes of this, because now if this dinner doesn't go well, Brie could potentially be losing her whole career over this.
True, although I don't think the stakes need to be that high.
No, they really
don't.
It
literally could just be, the food is ruined, that looks really bad on me.
Yeah.
Because that could pretty much somewhat ruin a career anyway.
Well, I mean, Brie's done some stuff which I would have questioned, like, whether or not it would ruin her career as well. Let's not forget about that whole thing with the wedding cake.
Yeah, you see, all these things would add up.
Orson drugging her and taking her to that, like, kids' demonstration thing.
Yeah, but that was iconic. She could probably just pretend she was doing a character.
Yeah. Or it's Martha Stewart.
This guy does need to calm down, though. You can't tell an ex-alcoholic to have one drink.
Right? It doesn't work that way.
Just one drink. Like, no, it doesn't. The brain is not... It doesn't function the same way as yours. That one drink could tip her over.
Yeah. Back in the kitchen, Sam is tasting the food, which has apparently been tampered with, as someone has swapped the sherry drizzle for vinegar. The food has been ruined, and Brie begins to panic, wondering how this could have happened, because everything was fine yesterday when they tested the recipe, and the sherry has been locked in the cabinet since then. But Sam implies that as Andrew hasn't returned his keys, he has probably done this.
Not to sound too pedantic, but should she really be eating anything with sherry drizzle on it?
That's true!
I guess if you're eating it, it's not the same. But... Who knows?
I never even questioned that. I was just like, oh yeah, there we go.
Honestly though, vinegar.
It's fine, it's vinegar though. It's not sherry drizzle.
A vinegar drizzle, that sounds revolting.
Of course it's revolting. With half the plates already out on the tables, Brie decides to set off the sprinklers, ruining the food and saving her business.
Yeah, it's a desperate move, but it's genius.
There's cobbler in the parking lot.
Like, oh no, the water's ruined all the food. Ah.
Back at home, Bree is drinking a homemade hot chocolate, telling Orson that she is depressed because Andrew tried to ruin her career tonight. But Orson tells Bree that he doesn't believe it was Andrew at all, making her question what Sam has said. Orson doesn't really believe Andrew is smart enough to pull it off, and I don't necessarily think that that's true. I don't think that Orson genuinely believes that Andrew isn't smart enough. I think he just needs to find a plausible way to maybe get through to Bree, and slagging off Andrew is probably Orson's only way of doing it.
Yeah, that's a good way of looking at it, actually. I really like that he's sticking up for Andrew again, even if he's doing it by saying as if Andrew could get away with something like this, but it's still... He is sticking up for Andrew, and I like it.
Yeah. Orson believes it is possibly Sam, and at first Bree doesn't believe Sam would hurt her, but Orson brings up the fact that it's Andrew that's being hurt from this, not Bree.
Yeah.
And that's Bree's storyline. Finally, Lynette. So Irina is trying on wedding dresses at a Russian bridal shop because she insisted on coming to one, and she's bitching at the owner, who hates Irina just as much as Lynette does, it seems.
Isn't that a bit of a weird scenario? Like, Lynette is wedding dress shopping with her arch nemesis, and it's a Russian wedding dress shop, well, supposedly in Fairview. Like, what are the chances?
And, well, yeah, I imagine they've gone out of town for it. But
I mean, the only reason they're at a Russian wedding dress shop is to serve the plot.
But
because of the phone call, which is totally fine, and I'm totally here for it.
At the same time, you do get people out there that like to go to businesses owned by people of their nationality.
No, of course, but... What are the chances?
It's not surprising that, you know, it's not completely surprising anyway, I should say, that Irina would want to go to a Russian wedding dress shop.
Of course, but you'd think it'd be like...
Also, probably
like
means...
Oh, it's like 100 miles away.
Also, it probably means that Irina is hoping that she'll see someone just like her, and that she can just bitch about Lynette in Russian, in her native tongue. It's been such a long time since she's spoken to someone in her native tongue.
Yeah.
Irina goes back into the changing room, and Lynette apologises on her behalf. The owner and Lynette bond, and Irina's phone goes off. Lynette answers, and it's some Russian dude, which Irina takes the phone from Lynette and speaks to Alexei in a hushed voice. Lynette asks who it was, but Irina tells Lynette that if she wanted her to know, she would have said, and she would have said it in English. And this is when the owner speaks up and offers to translate for her. And I love the wedding dress shop owner.
She's absolutely love her. If you've worked in retail, then you understand.
She's there like, Mrs. I can say it in English.
Right, I can translate it.
Queen! Oh my god, yes, girl. Mm. So after hearing what Irina said on the phone, she rushes to what I assumed was the police station, but I actually think it's the embassy.
Yeah.
Or something along those lines, to convince them to bring Irina in and start her deportation process, as Lynette believes she's clearly done something illegal. But apparently they don't have enough to go on, and she even offers to let them slap her about a bit, but that still doesn't work.
Yeah, it was quite concerning behaviour, wasn't it? The way she's like, she's a foreigner, start your deportation now. It's like, oh, Lynette.
It's because according to the Russian bridal shop owner, what Irina said on the phone was, I'm not worried, you'll never find me, or something along those lines, which now Lynette has taken and ran with it and gone, oh god, someone's looking for her, it must be illegal. Mm. She must be, you know, she must have a balloon of cocaine shoved up her ass. At hearing that the man that Lynette is talking to is single with no kids, she tells him that he just doesn't get it and goes to leave before finding a woman who happens to dislike her daughter-in-law, so Lynette begs her for help instead.
Yeah, she just so happens to find an officer who has a daughter-in-law who she can relate to.
Yeah.
I love that.
Lynette's storyline so far is very...
Convenient?
Convenient, yes. Yeah. It's very convenient. Thank you. I couldn't think of the word. Everything that seems to be happening only really seems to be happening to progress the plot. And actually, when you think about it in a real life situation, you'd be like, what are the fucking chances of this happening?
I mean, yeah, we have to go to a Russian bridal shop. And oh, I just so happened to have a Russian lady who heard what she was saying. Yeah.
Tom is teaching Parker how to drive, and Lynette is back at home attempting to get Irina's passport number so the embassy can get her gone. Luckily, nobody is home, and so Lynette begins her rummaging. She finds it, writes it down, but then hears Irina and Preston come into the bedroom and start fooling around. Lynette has hidden herself behind the closet door and quickly texts Tom to tell him that he needs to rush home and save her because of the situation that she's now found herself in. And then Parker takes this moment to learn how to speed.
Mm-hmm.
And with help on its way, Lynette then takes this opportunity to sneak out by breaking a window with a baseball on the side. And then when Irina and Preston look all confused out the window, she'll be like, why is my window just broken? She sneaks out the door.
Yeah, that would never come again.
no, right?
Now, obviously, because I'm a good citizen, I have to point out, guys, even this situation is not a good enough excuse to start speeding all the way home. Okay?
No, it's not.
Don't do it. Lynette, you could have just said you were grabbing some laundry or just doing anything that a mum does in their son's room. Maybe make the bed, but anything to not be in the room when your son's about to get laid.
Yeah.
Anything but that.
And then the audacity of Irina to slag off Lynette whilst Lynette's in the room.
Yeah. Like I said, though, this happens a lot in this house, and the walls can't be that thick. Come on.
Well, no, but they've all probably learned to, you know, have sex quite quietly.
Yeah. No, I mean the slagging people off.
Oh, yeah. Well, they've probably learned to do that quite quietly, too.
But the fact that she would... Yeah, but they're not.
Well, for the sake of, you know, filming, they're not. But we can imagine that.
Stage really... whisper. Yeah. Stage whisper.
It's now the wedding day, and Preston is freaking out because he can't find his left shoe. Eddie is his best man for some reason, which is weird because I don't actually think we've ever seen Eddie and Preston interact. We've seen Eddie and Porter.
And we know that he's friends with Danny.
Yeah.
But I guess no one else was of it. Why not his brother? Where's Porter?
Yeah.
why are we're only having one twin at a time now.
Is that because they can't afford both twins, so they've just got the same twin, and then they stick a mustache on one for each scene?
Yeah, maybe. A bit weird. Where is he?
I don't know, because I would have thought that the twin would have been the best man.
Not even Parker.
No.
No, just Eddie, who we've only seen in this one season.
Yeah. So Tom is trying to get Lynette to look for Preston's shoe, but Lynette has hidden herself outside, apparently with Preston's shoe hidden in the oven, in the hopes of delaying the wedding long enough for the woman at immigration to call back, because she never did.
That's genius. They would never look in the oven. Only Lynette uses it.
Why would you look in the oven for a shoe anyway?
Yeah, good point. That is also true.
Like, so even if any of them also use this oven, it's not really the place you think to look for a shoe.
Because she was outside, I just assumed she buried it.
Yeah, me too. So Lynette has announced that she's not going to the wedding, and then this is when the woman shows up. So we cut to Lynette coming to Irina's bedroom to talk to her, and she tells her that she's beautiful, first of all, because that's what you say to a bride.
Yeah, even when you hate.
And to be fair, Irina did look stunning.
Yeah, so she wasn't wrong.
She wasn't wrong. And then she asks if this wedding dress was as nice as her first wedding dress. It turns out that Irina married Alexei, and then Irina explains this away, claiming Alexei was not a nice man, and now he refuses to sign the divorce papers unless she pays him money.
Mm-hmm.
Fine. Unfortunate situation, it's not really fine, but fine explanation, whatever.
It's a lie.
But that doesn't explain the guy in Italy who she stole from.
Yeah, wiped his bank account clean.
Yep. And now he's pressing charges. Irina ultimately doesn't care because she thinks she's won. And when Preston sees those files in Lynette's hands, she will explain it away and Preston will believe her like he always does.
Like he always does.
Yeah.
Oh, what a bitch.
But Preston is behind her and he's heard it all and he asks to be alone with Irina.
Mm-hmm.
Which is great. Yeah. It was a really fierce scene.
Yeah, it was a really good scene. Pretty poor play from Irina there, but good job, Lynette.
Yeah, like, just Lynette, mother hen, protecting her chicks. I love it. Later on, Lynette comes to see Preston, who has called off the wedding, to tell him that she's okay if he hates her right now, but she loves him and she will wait for him, which is a really sad scene.
Yeah, that touched my heart.
Yeah.
But he doesn't hate her. He knows that she was right.
Yeah, I think he just needs a moment,
He's just in his feelings.
Yeah, he needs a moment to come to terms with what's happened. And.
But try not to take too long because I miss you already.
Oh, it's so sad. Those are the last lines she said in the scene.
God, she's such a mum.
She really is. Irina is walking down the street with her suitcase when Eddie pulls up. He offers her a lift and tells her that she can stay at his, you know, with no funny business unless you want to. Oh, it's cringe. It's so cringe. Oh, whoever plays Eddie, I don't have the actor's name, but whoever plays him so well. This weird, creepy virgin that's so desperate to have sex, but is failing in every sense of the word. Oh, it's so good.
Yeah, he does a really good job.
So, in the aim of hoping to convince Irina to stay at his place so that she can save money.
Yeah, and he can woo her.
Yeah. Oh, God.
Woo!
So he even tells her, actually, that she can use him. He's like, think of it as a transition relationship. And he's like, you can use me to get over Preston. I don't care. Which is even worse. That's even worse because that shows you're desperate. And there's nothing more unattractive than desperation.
Yeah, it's only the guy who you were just his best man like 10 minutes ago.
Right?
Jesus.
True. That is true. But anyway, Irina lays some harsh truth down on Eddie, telling him that she's just a little out of his league and calls him a greasy-haired little boy. She's like, I didn't come to America to get with some greasy-haired little boy.
You know, it's not harsh. He was being a creep.
He was really being a creep.
Yeah.
And we know who Eddie is, so ultimately I'm like, yeah, read him, Irina. You do you, girl.
Get some. Yeah, not you, Eddie. Her.
Eddie pulls over and we hear him kill Irina and then we see her body and him digging a grave.
Yeah, so we find out that Eddie is a bit of an incel and a major creep and
just
a psychopath.
A bit of an incel.
He's a psychopath. I mean, and there's the reveal.
Yeah.
Now,
We assume Eddie is the Fairview Strangler. That's not actually been confirmed so far from our point of view. Eddie's just strangled a woman.
I mean, it would be hilarious if it turned out that there was a Fairview Strangler and Eddie another murderer.
But anyway. And then they team up.
But that was quite a shocking revelation.
Mm. It was a good episode, though. This was, I think, a really enjoyable episode. Again, shame about Gabby's storyline to a certain extent, because it did just feel like a second-hand story.
Yeah, I had a fun time with this episode. Gabby's did feel that way. Although, having seen the whole show, I think it plays into some future storylines quite nicely.
It does, but when you've not seen the rest of it, that just feels like it's a story. Everyone else's story is setting up something in another way.
Mm-hmm.
We've got Lynette's story with the Strangler. And we've got Susan's story with money problems and Angie's story with Patrick, Bree's story with Sam, and Gabby's just kind of there.
Yeah, true. And God, I hate Bob and Lee. I'm so tired of them. They've broken up, and can't they leave the lane and Catherine and Robin move back in?
Yeah.
Like, take their house.
I'm all for Catherine and Robin coming back.
Out with gays and in with the lesbians. Please.
Moving on to the ending of the episode. So Mary Alice talked about how people don't pay attention to the lives of others because we have our own shit going on. And we see Susan worry about her marriage to Mike, Gabby worried about Bob and Lee, Bree suspecting Sam, and Lynette welcoming Eddie into her home.
Yeah, as she's probably been doing every day for years.
Yeah, it's probably just your average friend of a child.
Yeah.
Anyway, that is the episode.
Yeah, so let's move on to Joel's pick for gayest moment of the episode. So what do you have?
I mean, I feel like there are a lot of moments that could compete for gayest moment,
mm-hmm.
but my award for gayest moment goes to Irina for that utter self-awareness that she's got.
Okay.
Like, I've come to America and I'm a little out of your league, I think. I didn't come all this way to get with some greasy-haired little boy. That was me on your average Grindr hookup when I was single. And I travel all that way and then see the person and be like, that's not what your photo looks like. I didn't travel all this way to get with some greasy-haired man.
Yeah, quite the burn. But yeah. He deserved it. He was being really creepy.
He was.
Yeah, bring him down a peg.
So yeah, that's my award for gayest moment.
And then what do you have for straightest moment?
My award for straightest moment again, I do think there are a few options for this, but I am going to, this week, give it to Mike for refusing to go to Susan about his money problems and instead going to Carlos behind her back.
Yeah, there's nothing more straight and manly than saying, this may be a marriage, but I don't want to talk to my wife.
No, I know, exactly.
So, yeah, I get that.
Also, rest in peace, Irina.
Or don't.
In memoriam to Irina, who was only on our screens for a few episodes. Wonderful yeah. character. You really brought some fun nitty grittiness to Lynette's story.
Yeah, and I like a villain.
Yeah. Anyway, now moving on to B's awards for best and worst parents. So who do you have for the best parent?
So
and why is it Lynette?
Well, bear with. My award for
best parent of the episode.
Okay, so hear me out. I gave this to Mike.
Why?
No, not really. I gave it to Lynette, but I didn't want you to be right.
I thought you were going to say Tom, you know.
Tom?
For teaching Parker how to drive.
Screw Tom. I gave this to Lynette. She won that battle.
She did.
And maybe they would have won sooner if Tom had helped.
Yeah.
Tom, as if.
She was teaching Parker how to drive. I genuinely thought you were going to give it to Tom specifically because you knew it would irritate me that you'd overlooked Lynette.
No, but yeah. Although, that being said, Parker needs to learn some nice smooth stops and maybe some clutch. They're not going to have clutches. It's going to be automatics over there.
Yeah. But anyway, so, okay, who do you have for the worst parent?
My award for
worst parent of the episode.
Naturally, I gave this to Mike.
Yeah, as I thought.
For being too proud to have his wife help him with his debts. And, well, this affects Susan and MJ too.
Yeah.
Now, I'm not saying he's a bad parent for being in debt. That would be ridiculous.
No, it's the way he's going about it.
It's just, he won't talk to his wife about it, which I completely understand, but also there was no one else I could give it to, really. So.
No, not really. You are not a bad parent for having money problems.
No, you're just a bad person.
Yeah. No, we all fall into money problems at some stage in our life. There are very, very few people out there that have a worry-free life without having to think about how we're going to make it to our next paycheck.
Well, the percentages clearly show that there are a lot more poor people.
Yes.
And it can't be easy in America with all of the health debt and all of that. So.
No, exactly.
So, and on that lovely note, that was season 6, episode 19, We All Deserve to Die. If anyone has any questions, queries, comments, and theories, where can they find us?
You can find us on Instagram at boyfriendsreview.
Our artwork is done by Louis, who is on Instagram at docredmonkdesign, and there's a link to his Etsy page where he does commissions. Join us next time when we'll be back in your ear holes with season 6, episode 20, Epiphany.
A very good episode.
Yeah. So, see you then.
Bye, guys.
Bye.